Your life will change beyond your wildest dreams if you come in here and you give yourself to this program. And at least I know that was my experience. I want to thank Nancy and Richard and Gordon and Diane for coming down here with me tonight from North County. And I'd like to thank Randy and tell Paul thank you for asking me to come up here and speak. My sobriety date is December 14th, 2007. And I'm going to share, I guess, what it was like, what happened, and then what really happened, and what it's like now. And my sponsor is Kathy Kay, and she has a sponsor who has a sponsor. And I also have a home group. It's the Wednesday noon women's meeting in Oceanside, otherwise known as the handbag meeting, or the morning 8:30 a.m. in Carlsbad Sobriety Rocks, Monday through Friday. So, you know, I am the third child of four born into a German-Irish Catholic alcoholic family. And, you know, I'm certain that when I was born, it was like, okay, Mr. and Mrs. Emery, here's another alcoholic for you, you know. And my dad, he always told me ever since I can remember, if you drink like me, you're going to become an alcoholic like me, and you'll probably die of cirrhosis of the liver. But make sure you eat something, because it'll slow the whole... It slows the process of alcoholism down, you know. And that, you know, I grew up in a functioning alcoholic family. I mean, everything we did, there was booze, you know. Every evening was happy hour and toddy time. And when we lived in a house that was in a cul-de-sac, all the kids were in one house and all the adults were in another house. And you know, that's just what they did. For me, for this alcoholic, and you know, what I share from up here is just, it just has to do with me, and I have no opinion on what other people do, and I'm not a doctor. I share from the podium what my experience is, and I had a good childhood, and we were middle class, and my dad worked, and my dad went to work with a beer between his legs, and he came home from work with a beer between his legs, and he drove with beer, you know, and that's just... You know, my mom, when we had earaches, my mom would, you know, blow smoke in our ear because it was supposed to coat the earache part, you know. And that's... You too? That's just what we went through, and I was born and raised in Southern California, and there came a time where we were living up in LA, and we moved, and at this time I was not drinking yet, and I was not smoking cigarettes or doing other things, but I was a liar, and I was a cheat, and I was a thief, and I remember that, you know, all from probably age six on. I was always stealing something from someone. I was always in my mom's purse. I was always taking her money. And I was one of those that when you got caught, I was going to my grave with it. So I never copped to anything when I got caught. And you know, those like staring contests, you know, I mean, I was going to win. And I did. And it took me all the way up until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous before I would turn to someone and say, you know what, I'm wrong. And I'm sorry. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me how to do that. There came a time where my family, we moved up here to San Diego. My dad quit his job and decided to buy a bar. And so he bought the Sports Inn. It used to be over here off of the 163. And him and my Uncle Sam went into business together. And we moved up to San Diego. And I remember I was 10 years old. And by this time, I'm sure that, you know, I had tasted alcohol. But when I was 10, I remember, getting stoned for the first time. And by the time I was 10, I was a smoker. And I used to steal my mom's cigarettes. And she would tell me as she had a cigarette hanging out of her mouth, I wasn't allowed to smoke. And, you know... that was the example, and so I became a smoker and a liar and a cheater and a thief, and it worked. And I really liked making myself feel different in any way, shape, or form. And there came a time where my parents got divorced, and just kind of fast forward, my mom, moved my brother and I up to Washington, and my dad stayed here. You know, she says she gave him the option, it's either me and the four kids, or it's, the girlfriend and the booze. And she says he picked the girlfriend and the booze. So we went to Washington, I was 16 and my brother was 15, and I don't know that I had a real powerful, God conscious. I mean, we would go to church and we had CCD, and I just never paid attention to it. But I do know that when I was 16 years old, my 15-year-old brother came home and he had been drinking and he wanted to go back out for the night, and my mom told him that he couldn't. And he was about 6'3" and he stood, quite way taller than my mom. And he left. So for what I did is I went, and we were living in Liberty Lake, Washington at the time, and I looked for him, and my other sister looked for him, and probably about 4 hours went by, and I quit looking for him. I went to our friend's house and I was drinking a beer waiting to find him, and my sister came in and she said he had shot himself and that he was across the lake and he was dead. And what happened to me at that moment and through that period of time is I got really mad at God, and I remember being in the church and going through the funeral and all that crap, and I just remember, F you, that stuff doesn't happen, and I went on my own, in my own world, and I drank the way I wanted to drink, and I smoked, and I never listened to my mom. All of a sudden, she wanted to take, be a part or see what I was doing in my world, and my brother was her baby. That was who she focused all her attention on. So what happened was is I wouldn't go back to school up there, so my mom sent me back down to San Diego, and I lived with my sister. So I was on that self-destructive path, I was mad at my family, and I didn't want them to tell me what I need to do or what, or anything like that. I got in crappy relationships. My dad said you can't date, people that aren't white, and so I went and got the darkest boyfriend I could, and just to piss him off, because he told me I couldn't do it. And that was the way that I lived my life. I did graduate high school. I had a lot of fun in high school. I drank a lot in high school, and I was a daily smoker, So I graduate high school, and I'm a bagger at Ralph's, and I'm living in Vista, California, and I drive up and down these highways loaded, I go to Mexico, and I leave, and I remember getting in the car, and I remember getting home, but I don't remember the drive in between. I don't know if any of you have ever driven down the highway that way, when you roll all the windows down, and it's like holding one eye open and just hoping to make it home, and I did that a lot. So I had a fake ID because my sister and I looked alike, I'm working at the grocery store, and this gal that I'm hanging out with, she says, "Hey, I want to join the Marine Corps." And I said, "The Marine Corps? Dryheads are stupid, So I told her I would just go down there with her as moral support, and I was sitting there, and the recruiter said, "What are you doing with your life?" And I'm like, "Well, I'm a bagger at Ralph's. I got a fake ID. I go to Dollar Drink Night everywhere in town, and I drive this piece of crap car." And, one thing led to another, and all of a sudden I signed up for 6 years in the Marine Corps. So when I got to Parris Island, South Carolina, I would honestly say that that knowing now, going through what I've gone through, that I detoxed in boot camp, and it wasn't pretty, you know. And I thought I would get to Parris Island and I'd be able to smoke a cigarette and get a drink, you know, and then go check in, you know, I'm here for the Marine Corps. And if there's any Marines in here, it doesn't really work that way. I don't know how they knew who I was, but they did. And when I got off the airplane, that was it, you know. And the Marine Corps was one of the greatest blessings in my life. It got me away from home, and I needed to be away from home. So I signed up for 6 years, and I got to pick my first duty station. I didn't know at the time that everyone that serves 4 years gets to go to Okinawa, Japan anyways. But I picked Okinawa. And I got to Japan, and when I got to Okinawa, 2 months later, I found out I had gotten myself pregnant while I was home on leave. And long story short, I stayed pregnant, and I signed papers. You know, my mom said she would take care of the kid if I needed to go to war. And so I had to quit drinking, and I did. You know, my son is 18 years old. He just turned 18 in June, and you know, I drank real hard up until I found out I was pregnant, and then I just smoked cigarettes while I was pregnant. And he was born in Okinawa, and I came back and went to 29 Palms, and what happened was is I hurt my back, and what happens is the doctors, they prescribed me pain medication. And for those of you that, you know, have taken pain medication, it's kind of like a six-pack, you know. And for this alcoholic, I found a way to be loaded all day legally and then drink at night. And so that's what I did, and that was my last 15 years. I took a consistent dose of narcotics and drank. And I got out of the military as a disabled vet, and when you are a disabled vet, you get priority with the post office for some reason to get employed with them. And so I did, and I had another kid and was going through a divorce, and I got a job at the United States Postal Service. And so I'm a single mom of two kids going through a divorce, and I am a daily drinker. And I'm very arrogant about my drinking, and I drink wherever I'm at, and I don't care if you're not supposed to drink. I smoke cigarettes wherever I'm at, and I'm always loaded on pills. And that was my life, and it worked for a long time. I mean, it actually worked. I got loaded all the way up until December 13th, 2007, you know, but I was functioning, and I would drive my kids around, and I would show up to the back-to-school nights and the mother-son dances, and I had my water bottle with booze in it, you know, or I had my Big Gulp, and you know, I thought it was stupid that they had, you know, mother-son dances at nighttime. You know, I was like, this is ridiculous. You know, don't they know that this is my time? And I was selfish, you know. So what happened is that while working for the post office, one day I walked up to his door, and he was one of my angels, and that's my husband today. I delivered the mail to him 9.5 years ago, and we went out to dinner, and you know, we've been together ever since. And so I'm a people pleaser, and when I meet him, you know, he's always wanted to have kids, and you know, I'm like, I'll have your kid, you know. It's like, you know, so I did, you know. And I'm 9 months pregnant, and I'm a letter carrier, and you know, I am not sober, you know. My last four pregnant, well, my middle three, it was quitting drinking was not an option at all when I was pregnant, because I would get really sick. And, you know, it's a very scary thing to be in that situation. You know, I don't know. I share it openly because I hope that it helps another alcoholic. You know, I know today that God forgives me, and by working through the steps, I'm learning to forgive myself. You know, I know that there's a God because the things that I did, I have an amazing, you know, family, and my children are healthy, and that's not usually the case. And, you know, so I'm delivering the mail, and I am not a go 8 hours without a drink kind of gal, you know, and I'm in Carlsbad, and I live in Carlsbad, and my house and my husband's house is on the route, you know, and so, you know, I'm going to my house, and I'm mixing up a cocktail, and I'm driving the mail truck around, and I'm drinking. You know, and that's where my alcoholism took me, and you know, I deterred from routes to go get prescriptions filled. I mean, I was just like they couldn't catch me, or I couldn't get caught, or it just didn't matter. You know, I was just in such a focus of trying to feel good, and you know, one day the thought came across my mind that if I got caught drinking in the mail truck, I was going to go to federal prison. And that kind of scared me because I didn't know who was going to take care of all these kids, and I had a really good life going on, and so I went to the post office and I quit my job and told them, you know, thanks for the lifetime job, but it's just not working out. And and so I went home, and that was in 2005 and or 2004, and I became a stay-at-home mom. And you know, I drank all day, and it was about 2004 is when I started. My alcoholism, I know today it was my body shutting down, but at the time I had no clue, and I don't know about you, like, there wasn't anybody that I could call on the phone and say, dude, I'm like throwing up yellow bile and I can't keep a drink down. What's wrong? You know, so I throw up the yellow bile and try to drink, and you know, and I did that, and I sat in the corner of the couch, and I'm a gambler as well, and I haven't had to go gamble since my sobriety date, and that's just for me, you know, to keep my head straight. But I used to do scratchers, and I mean, not like 4 scratchers. I would go get the whole roll of $5 scratchers and sit in the corner of the couch and scratch them, you know, and eat pills and smoke cigarettes. And, you know, at this point, I had quit cooking, I had quit doing laundry, I had quit cleaning. You know, I, heaven help my husband if he tried to touch me, because I wanted no part of anyone touching me. And, you know, my life was miserable, and I was sick, and I remember thinking so many times, like, man, you know, you got... How are you going to ever get out of this? You know, because there had been times when I was running low on certain things, and I was buckled over in the bed, and I couldn't, you know, take care of my kids. And so in 2006, what happened for me is, you know, my husband and I, well, actually, I fell down the stairs right before St. Patrick's Day, and I was going to the fridge to get more beer, and I fell down the stairs. And at this point, you know, of my drinking, there was a lot of nights where I know now that my husband's let me know. He used to follow me. I used to walk in blackouts, and we have a spiral staircase, and we have an open banister, you know, and it's tile floor on the bottom. And he said, I used to get up in the middle of the night and walk around and bounce into the walls, and he used to follow me to make sure I wasn't going to fall over the banister. And, you know, I tortured my kids. I tortured my husband. I took hostages. I, you know, when I'm drinking, I'm a child abuser. I'm an adulteress. You know, all of that stuff that comes along with not having a single care in the world and not knowing how to care. And I hated myself, and I hated you, and I sure as heck hated those kids that were in my house. And I didn't know what to do, you know. I mean, there was no happiness. So I fall down the stairs, and it's right before St. Patty's Day, and so, of course, I get a green cast, and, you know, to celebrate. And so I've got this cast, and you know, for an alcoholic who likes alcohol and solid alcohol, to fall down the stairs, that's a great thing because you get prescribed more narcotics, you know. I mean, so it wasn't like really a bad thing. So I've got this cast, and my poor family, you know, my husband took the youngest and left me at home with the two, and he went to Florida to go see his family. And I remember during that time I was so sick that I locked myself in my bedroom. And by this time, you know, after falling down the stairs, I figured it was a good idea to put a little fridge in my bedroom. So I have the little fridge in my bedroom, and it was like I didn't need to go anywhere, you know, because drinking really wasn't fun anymore. You know, it was something I had to do to just get through the day. And I held myself hostage there for like 6 days. And I mean, heaven knows what my other two kids were doing. I didn't care. As long as they left me alone, I was fine. Or so I thought I was. You know, my husband and I, we went to Cabo San Lucas, that was in May of 2006. And I took my walking cast off, you know, put all this sun oil on, and you know, I didn't even get out of San Diego Airport without, you know, 4 double Bloody Marys. And I get to Cabo, and you know, I'm gone. So I lay in the sun, and I guess I burnt my foot, you know. I put my walking cast back on that night, and we went and walked around town. And what happened was I really messed my foot up, and I had third degree burns on my foot. And so we took the walking cast off, and the next 10 days was hell in Cabo San Lucas because my foot had grown, and it was blisters, and it was nasty. And I was in pain, and I'm telling you, you know, at this time I was a 20 or 30 Norco a day person, and that wouldn't touch anything, you know. So we came back to the States, and it was Memorial Day weekend, and I was drinking in the backyard with my dad and my Uncle Sam, and you know, I've got an IV pick line in my arm because I went to Kaiser, and I've got a bone infection, and I'm going back and forth to Kaiser 3 times a day to have antibiotics, and I'm drinking, you know, and something happened, you know. My husband looked at me and he said, "Just tell him," you know, to my dad. And I told my dad, I said, "I'm messed up, you know. I'm not just drinking, you know. I'm taking a ton of pills, and I don't know if I'm gonna live." So we all finished our beers and decided that I was gonna go to rehab. And my dad said that he would go too, you know. And my dad is, you know, my dad drinks from the time he gets up till he goes to bed still. So that was the first time I had said it out loud. Now, the next morning, that was very, I was not really happy that I had said that I would go to rehab. So we're calling rehabs, and you know, prior to that day, you know, I'm the last year or so, I'm watching every intervention and Dr. Phil, mothers driving loaded in their SUVs, you know, and so of course I've got a couple ideas of where I'd like to go to rehab because I've watched intervention, So I tell him, you know, we decide the Oasis Treatment Center in Anaheim, but I had just filled a few prescriptions, and, you know, there was things coming up, like my daughter was having a Brownies play, you know, in a few weeks, and I wasn't ready, and I remember it was Wednesday, and my husband came down, and I was on the couch, and I was sick, and I'm drinking, and he goes, "You're going Friday," and I'm like, that's not really going to work. And he said, you're going. And he says, let's start our lives, you know. And he quit drinking the next day after we decided I was going to rehab. He hasn't picked up a drink since. He's got more sobriety than me. And I don't know how he did it. But, you know, so it was Friday, I believe, like June 2nd, and I'm getting driven up to the Oasis Treatment Center. And, you know, I am such a wuss, and I send my son and my daughter off to school, and I tell them that I'm leaving for the weekend to try to go make me feel better, and that I'll see him on Monday, knowing that I was not coming back on Monday. I did not call my ex-husband and let him know that his daughter was going to be with my husband, and I was going to rehab because I was too chicken. And, you know, so my husband drove me with our three-year-old up to rehab, and he took care of the three kids. And you know, I got to the Oasis Treatment Center. They sent me to Patmore Detox, and it was awful. I mean, you know, I was a 30-pack a day drinker, a beer drinker, and a lot of narcotics, and I had to detox off of that, and I had seizures, and it was awful. And I was there for 5 days, and on June 6th, I got to the Oasis Treatment Center. Now, I went to rehab because my husband wanted me there, and because my kids wanted me there, and because even my family that drinks wanted me there. So I get there, and one of the clients said, hey, you're bipolar, take this, you know. And so I did. And that, you know, so I'm in the shrink's office, and I'm pretending to be bipolar because they've told me what bipolar people do, you know, and because I don't know how to live life without putting something in my body. So I abused Seroquel and lithium for 60 days. Not a good buzz at all. I don't suggest anyone do it, but that's what I did. And I paid $25,000 for my big book and to get loaded in rehab. And, you know, while I was there, you know, my husband tried to hold the fort down, and you know, it was pretty crazy. He's self-employed, and you know, he's taking care of these three kids, you know, and didn't know what to do. And so I stayed up at the treatment center for 60 days, and I got out, and they told me, go get a sponsor, go to a meeting, work the steps, be of service, pray. Well, I didn't pray. I went and got a sponsor. I'm not sober. I got a sponsor. I started working the steps. I got commitments, and I went to meetings. And I did that. And I a couple months out of rehab, I was right back in the gamut. I was drinking when I could, but alcohol you can smell, and the pills you couldn't. And so I was absolutely nuts. I was insane. I was back at the VA. I was back at all of my old stomping grounds, and doing what I was doing before I went to rehab. And I got pregnant again. And you know, I have since figured out what causes that. And so I got pregnant again, and you know, that last 18 months, I did things that I just never thought, you know, I would ever do. I was nuts. I went to meetings, and I had this really awesome sponsor. I was of service. I did 12-step calls, and I wasn't sober at the time. But I did do 12, you know, it's like I had good intentions. Just I just thought I was different, you know, and I would see people take cakes, and I'd think, I'm going to be up there one day taking a 10-year dirty cake, you know. And that's not how it works. Like, most of us die when we do stuff like that, and I've lost friends in Alcoholics Anonymous in these past few years that have done what I did. And, you know, so I'm pregnant, and I'm pissed. And people in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, it's like, I got three other kids, and this one is on the way. And they're like, they would see my face, and they'd be like, are you okay? And it's like, like, oh man, they're like, yeah, I know, it's hard. Early sobriety and three kids and being pregnant, I don't know how you do it, you know? And it's like, I wasn't doing it, you know? And so I went and did things, you know, like, I remember I was 6 months pregnant, and you know, I had a bad day, and I hated everyone in my house, and I left, and I made a conscious decision to go drink. And I remember going to the liquor store, and I got a pint of vodka, and I went down to the beach, and I drank it, and it was gone. And I went back to the liquor store, and I bought a fifth of vodka, and I went to the beach, and I drank half of it. And I'm driving, and I'm 6 months pregnant, and I went to another alcoholic's house to talk to them, to tell them all my problems. And then I went home, and I had my face in the toilet for like 12 hours, sicker than a dog, and I did it again the next day. You know, I don't know where that insanity comes from except for my alcoholism, you know, and I found myself shoving my 7 month pregnant butt into clothes to not look pregnant, so that I could go to the doctor's office and they would do what I needed them to do. And I had no reservations over it. I mean, I was just absolutely insane. And, you know, my husband, we just got married actually in 2008. And so we were planning a wedding. And, you know, people used to say to me, oh my gosh, you have four kids. And I'd be like, yeah, I got four kids, you know. And I'll tell you that when I was 90 days sober, I woke up and realized, holy shit, you got four kids. Like, they're all living in this house, and they're not going anywhere. That's how delusional I was when I was out there. So we're planning this wedding, and you know, I've got like five sober women at the bridal shop, and there's, you know, I'm in there trying on wedding dresses, and they're all so happy for me, and I am like dying inside. And you know, the thought came across my mind was like, I was getting married in July, and it was like, you're not going to be alive, you are going to be dead. And you know, I was calling the pharmacist, because by this time I had gotten myself what happened was, is I ended up, I was at my sister's house, and my sister has multiple sclerosis, my older sister, and I was at her house, and I needed something, and so I saw her medicine, and I took it, and I didn't know what I was taking at the time, but as it turns out, I was taking methadone, which is synthetic heroin, and you know, so I manipulated my doctors to prescribe that to me, and was drinking, and I was, you know, it had turned me into my last few months where I was crawling through doggy doors with my kids out in the car, robbing my sister, taking her stuff. And then I'd go home, and I would call her, you know, because like a good thief always wants to make sure we're not, you know, like they don't suspect us. And, you know, she, and I would go back and help her look for her stuff, you know. And I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, so she certainly doesn't think that I have done anything to harm her, you know. And I can tell you, I've since made an amends to her, and I am very blessed and very grateful that she is a part of my life today. And that, you know, when I'm drinking, all bets are off. I'm going to do crazy stuff. I'm going to hurt you. I'm going to steal from you. I'm going to lie to you. I am. I live in a nice house, and I have a nice car, and you're not going to see me coming, you know. And that was the type of alcohol. I was not the Skid Row sleeping on the street. I was someone that you would not have even known I was doing what I was doing. So I was lying to my pharmacist once again, you know, because the prescription didn't come in the mail. And, you know, I had a moment of clarity, and it was like, you're going to die. And, you know, it's never going to be enough, ever. And and maybe what the people in Alcoholics Anonymous are saying is true, and just maybe there's someone out there that can help you, you know. And I went home, and that was on a Monday, the 10th, and I made a decision that on Friday my daughter was going to her dad's, and I made a decision that I would start to detox, and I was going to give this Alcoholics Anonymous thing a try. And so, of course, those last 4 days, you know, I was absolutely insane and probably shouldn't have lived through what I was doing, but, you know, that's my story. You know, I went balls out, and I was convinced I wasn't ever going to be able to cook again. And so I made like eight different kinds of Christmas cookies, and my whole freezer was stocked. I mean, I was up around the clock, and no one understood why, and I looked like hell, and I was cleaning the house, and I was washing everything, even the clean clothes I was taking and washing, because I was convinced I was not going to be able to do the laundry sober, ever, you know? And I cleaned the house, So Thursday morning, December 13th, two things happened. One is my son woke me up that morning, and he was crying, and he's 15 at the time. At this time, I have a 15, a 10, a 5, and a 6-month-old, and he told me his best friend's brother had committed suicide up the street. And, you know, folks, for the first time in my life, I realized I was doing exactly what my brother had done. For the first time, you know, and I was 36, and something inside of me was like, I didn't want my kids to have to walk in and find me dead and screw up their lives. And, you know, that night my friend Nancy came and picked me up and was taking me to a meeting, and, you know, I got honest. I started crying. I told her, I'm not sober. I never have been, even though I've 12-stepped you, and, I'm going to start detoxing tomorrow, and I don't know if I'm going to live through it. And, you know, she said, I love you. Let's go shopping, and I'll pick you up in the morning and take you to a meeting. And, you know, what I can tell you that I did is that morning I got up and I hit my knees, and I did a step 1, 2, and 3. And, you know, I've known I was an alcoholic, but for the first time I believed that someone else could help me. And I turned my will and my life over to something that I didn't quite understand, but that I had seen in your eyes. And, you know, she picked me up, and we went to a meeting, and it was nuts. I mean, I didn't sleep. You know, I did not get honest with my husband right away. And so I told him that week, you know, when I was in my insanity, I said, you know, I really need to get back into that Alcoholics Anonymous thing. So this weekend, I'm really not going to be around a lot. And if you could take care of the 6-month-old, you know, I'm going to go to meetings and I'm going to find me a sponsor. You know, so really what it was is I didn't want him to pay attention to me, because I figured by Monday I was going to be okay, you know. Well, I wasn't okay by Monday. I hadn't, you know, I went 9 nights and 9 days without sleeping, and it was pretty terrible. And Monday morning the kids went to school, and I was in tears on the couch, and I told my husband, I said, I am sick, and I am detoxing, and I have flushed everything down the toilet, and I don't know if I'm going to make it through this, and I don't know when I'm going to get better, but I can't take care of the kids, and I'm scared, you know. And what he did is he loved me, and, you know, he's so cool. He went on the internet, you know, and he's at the store, and he's buying certain foods and bringing Epsom salt, and so I made it through the detox. And I want to share with you that when I was 5 days sober, this was real important. My husband gone to the store and, you know, bought me the Epsom salt. So I take this Epsom salt bath, you know, and my legs won't stop moving, you know. And so I'm in this bath, and I get out and wrap up, and I'm laying on my bed. And you know, folks, I had a spiritual experience. I had a burning bush experience. And I can tell you that from that moment, I know without a doubt that there is a power greater than me. And it sends chills from my toes to my head. And God is huge. And I laid there, and tears rolled out of my eyes, and I could hear my kids downstairs laughing, and I wanted to be a part of their life. And I remembered all the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that loved me, and I wanted to call and tell them thank you. And there was this power that came over me that was like, you're going to be okay. Just don't drink. And, you know, and then it lasted for about an hour, and then all of a sudden my legs started going again, you know. I did not know that was a spiritual experience at the moment. So the next night, I thought, I'm going to take that Epsom salt bath because I want my legs to stop moving, you know. And I took the bath and I laid on the bed and I did not have the same experience, you know. So I know today that that was a one-time shot, and I'm super grateful for it. So I'm an alcoholic and I have surrendered absolutely my alcoholism to this program. And you know, I can tell you that I asked a gal to sponsor me, and she told me to read 85 to 88 in the big book, to hit my knees and say the third step prayer on page 63, to call two different sober women every day, to go to a meeting every day, and to get three commitments. I said that. So I did that stuff, and I went to 270 meetings in my first 90 days. And I say that not to brag, but to tell you that I was incapable of doing anything else. I was just incapable. Like, I could not tolerate being around my kids for longer than 5 minutes. I was incapable of taking care of them, you know. And I've gone through the steps and been of service, and I've been able to sponsor women. And what happens is that I'm living life sober today, you know, the good and the bad. And, you know, I can tell you that I was here a year ago. Last year on October 17th, I came here. And October 12th, I had quit smoking cigarettes. And I have been a smoker since I was 10. I mean, and never had I quit smoking except for boot camp for 3 months because you didn't really have a choice. And, you know, so I was here October 17th, and, you know, I just lost my train of thought. That summer had been a rough summer, you know. I got sober. I get to learn how to be around my kids, and, you know, we start having relationships, and we start communicating, and we start fighting, and I start not liking them, and I get to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I get to call my sponsor, and she says, you know, here's the name of a counselor. Why don't you and your son go to counseling, you know, and I'm willing, and so I do that, you know, and I can tell you that my 18-year-old and I have a great relationship today, and you know, it was a rocky year and a half. June 22nd, I had just found out I was pregnant, and this was last summer, and it was my son's 17th birthday, and you know, we got a phone call from my husband's mom and my sister-in-law. She's 45 years old. She drank and used exactly as I had, and she was dead. And you know, my husband, this was not the first sibling that he's buried due to this disease. He's buried two, and has a third one that's been in and out of institutions. And you know, it was pretty rough. And I remember the last year of her life being on the phone with her from California to Florida, saying, you know, man, just take 30 days, just go away somewhere, you know, you can get out from under this. And she's telling me, I can't leave my son, you know, he's 7 years old, he can't be without his mom. Well, reality is he's definitely without his mom today, you know, and for the rest of his life. And I thank God every single day that I'm not without my kids. And at the time I was pregnant, and I was sick, and I was sick, and I was sick, and I was going to meetings, and people in Alcoholics Anonymous were praying for me, and what happened was we ended up losing the baby. I was 4 months pregnant, and he had trisomy 18, which is a chromosomal problem, and that happened on 9/11 last year, and so I was down here October 17th. what happened was, is in that summer of being sick, I started praying for the willingness to be willing, to quit smoking cigarettes. And because I loved smoking, and I realized I was, you know, doing something to myself, and I wanted to change. And something happened, and on October 12th, I gave that part of me to God. And I can tell you that I haven't picked up a cigarette since. And it's absolutely amazing. And every morning I get up and I hit my knees and I give it all to him. So being a little bit in self-will, you know, 2 months later I was pregnant again. And that's how I figured out how this thing happens. And I can tell you, you know, my two-month-old is here. Nancy's watching him. And it's a huge blessing in my life today. I can tell you that I've gotten to experience being pregnant sober. And I don't think I would have 5 kids if I had done every one of them sober. And that's just my truth. I mean, they're great, man. You know, but I can tell you that, you know, I'm coming up on 3 years in December, and it is hard taking care of a kid. I mean, you know, and so, you know, I'm learning how to do that. And you know, today I get up and I ask God how I can be of service, you know, to help the other alcoholic. And that's where the juice of this program is it tells us to trust God, clean house, and help others. And I have this amazing sponsor that when I call her on the phone, I'll say, I'm really worried about so-and-so. I think they're getting loaded and blah, blah, blah. And she says, just go be their sober sister, because it's really just about helping the other alcoholic. And it's like, okay, I don't have to put my opinion in. I don't have to judge them. And I just get to love them, you know. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me these past few years. They have come and they have loved. And there's a lot of me to love because I have a lot of kids. And, you know, I was told to put God, sobriety, me, and then everything else. And if you do that, you can stay sober one day at a time. My program, my sobriety, is the most important thing in my life. Because if I'm not sober, I am not a mom, and I am not a wife, and I'm not a daughter, and I'm not a sister, and I don't care about you. You know, and today it's just about learning how to live life one day at a time, and to make mistakes and to clean up those mistakes. And, you know, it's pretty cool. I've been blessed to, when I was 1 month sober, we started a women's meeting at my house, and it was just a potluck, and turned out, you know, someone said, hey, this is the KFC. So we've been doing it ever since. And it went from a couple women to, you know, 30 or 40 women that we do the meeting every Thursday night, and it's a potluck every Thursday night, and there's 3 babysitters, and the women bring their kids, you know, and that is a huge gift, because I was not a giving person before I got sober. It was about what I could take from you. And, you know, I got a resentment going to my morning meeting because I live in Carlton and I had to drive down to Encinitas every morning. And you have to sit in traffic. And it was like, why aren't there any meetings up in Carlsbad? And so, you know, I got to call my friend Gordon and say, you know, we need to do this. And since then, 6 months ago, we started a Sobriety Rocks morning meeting. It's Monday through Friday at 8:30 a.m. And you know what? From the first meeting, there was like 20 people at the first meeting. And now there's like 30 to 50 every single morning. So it's definitely something that was needed. And, you know, I get to be a part of life today. I get to see what God wants me to see. And, you know, I am absolutely certain that this disease will kill me. And I am absolutely certain that I have no lurking notions, like the big book tells me, that I'm immune to alcohol, that it will kill me. And I am absolutely grateful that I got to live the experiences I lived, and that my life is what it is today. And today I have freedom from alcohol, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has told me if I do the steps. Thanks.